From Studio 1B at PCJ Radio International, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific. Following weeks of anti-government protests, Thailand's Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra has dissolved parliament for fresh national elections. Ms. Yingluck plans to remain head of the caretaker government ahead of polls scheduled for February. This is unlikely to be accepted by the demonstrators who want Shinawatra family out of Thai politics altogether, Bo Hill reports.
Under mounting pressure from an opposition force that's refused to negotiate, the Thai Prime Minister says the best way forward is elections, where the people will decide.
Brothers and sisters of Thailand, I am Yingluck Shinawat, the Prime Minister of Thailand. I'd like to announce that I've decided to request a royal decree to dissolve Parliament.
It's an attempt to break a deadlock that's included street protests, the occupation of government offices, and even a no-confidence motion in Parliament. But demonstrators aren't satisfied.
I want Prime Minister Yingluck to resign and return power to the people.
I don't want them to dissolve Parliament. All of them should just resign and get out.
Protesters say Ms. Yingluck is a puppet of her brother, Thaksin Shinawat. He's a former Prime Minister who's popular with the poor, but hated by the Bangkok-based establishment and is living in exile. The opposition Democrat Party says Prime Minister Yingluck is using her power to allow her brother to return. On Sunday, the party announced a mass resignation of MPs.
We no longer want to be part of this House of Representatives.
The protest movement's leader has rejected Prime Minister Yingluck's offer of elections and is continuing to push for an appointed People's Council to replace the elected parliament. The Prime Minister has dismissed that as unconstitutional. But with protests continuing and opposition MPs refusing to take their seats in Parliament, the possibility of an election solving the impasse looks remote.
Bo Hill reporting from Bangkok. Thailand's latest political crisis was triggered earlier this month after Parliament tried to pass an amnesty bill, which was subsequently voted down in the Senate. The bill was seen as Prime Minister Yingluck's attempt to get her brother, ousted former leader Thaksin, back into the country. So, will fresh polls in February ease tensions? That's the question that Sen Lam put to Dr. Tul Sitsamwong, an anti-government protester with the Network of Citizens.
We would like the good government in the future after there's some change in the country.
So are the fresh elections for February, is that acceptable to you? Will the Democrats take part?
I don't think so, because Prime Minister Yingluck dissolved the parliament and asked for the next election, because she's so sure that the Pheu Thai party, her party, will win the election. And that will bring Thai into the same bad situation.
Into the bad situation. So into the same bad situation, according to you. But if it's the people, the Thai people, that vote back in Pheu Thai and also Prime Minister Yingluck, surely that's democracy in action.
You should know that the two. This government, Yingluck, won election 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago. But since then, she didn't serve the poor. She didn't serve the poor. She served only the need of her brother, Thaksin Shinawat. But we realized that everybody realized that the poor under Pheu Thai Party policy, they will give their vote. They will give their vote to Pheu Thai again. But the active citizen, like the report said, Bangkokian. In fact, it's not. It's the people, intellectual and active citizen over the Thai know that if the Yingluck Shinawat or someone from Shinawat family run the or rule Thailand again, they will damage the country like riot policy and spend a lot of money that destroy the country. So we don't think that the next election will be good for the country.
Dr. Tun, you say that Prime Minister Yingluck and Pua Thai don't serve the poor. How do you account for the huge support base outside of Bangkok for the Prime Minister and for Pua Thai? And these are largely working class communities and farmers, and they support the Prime Minister.
Right now, there's no money left to spend for the farmer, so they will realize. But many Thais still stick on the prachaniyom. I'm not sure what in English, like 30 baht health scheme or village fund. So and the democracy. Democrat system in Thailand is much strange, very strange. Water, they are not a free vote. They follow some important person in the village. They point out who to pick up.
Dr. Tun, if you are not going to take part in February's elections, what plans have you got for Thailand? Opposition plan to do?
I think I want to say that the above a million people that grabbed together about a month, especially yesterday protest, they asked for the to dissolve the parliament, and Yingluck Shinawat out of her position, and we have to some evolution in Thai political system for a while. No next election until some change.
The intermediate past president of East Timor, Jose Ramos Horta, has condemned Australia for bugging Timorese ministers and officials during negotiations over a massive oil and gas treaty in 2004. In his first interview since the controversy erupted, Mr. Ramos Horta says the Australian government should seize the moment to admit fault and begin negotiating a new treaty. He also suggests if the intelligence scandal had come to light sooner, Australia would have failed in its own bid to win a seat on the United Nations Security Council. Peter Lloyd speaks to him from his home in East Timor.
I had no idea at the time, and no, not anyone, that Australia would bug our offices.
How surprised were you when you learned about the nature of this bugging operation?
Well, I put it this way. If Australia was spying on North Korea or on China, clear enemies of the West, it's understandable. Everybody spy at that time. But when you try to listening in to phone conversations of the president of Indonesia, a friendly country, or his own wife, or when you bug a friendly neighbor like Timor-Leste, which Australia helped to free in 1999, and which Australia claimed to be a friend. Well, it really undermined 10 years of a relationship. And I don't know what Australia can do to restore confidence among East Timorese people and leaders, because I hope Australia does not underestimate the anger, the disappointment that it's bugging, its espionage towards Indonesia and Timor-Leste is causing. Australia should be more sensitive and transparent, because Australia likes to lecture Timor-Leste and other countries about transparency, about integrity in public life. Well, this has not been a very good example of transparency and honesty.
Can you tell me what view you have formed about the role of Alexander Downer, who after negotiating that treaty is now a Woodside advisor?
Well, I guess that tells all, no? I don't comment on that.
Can you tell me whether in 2012, when you, as president of Timor and the Prime Minister, were lobbying on behalf of Australia to secure a Security Council seat, did you know the detail of these spying operations?
Well, of course I didn't know. I knew about the spying operations only a few weeks ago.
Would it have changed your view about Australia's role in the Security Council?
Had we known that Australia was spying on us and spying on our friend, the Indonesian president, Susilo Bambang Widodo, and his wife, well, if those news had transpired before the vote for the Security Council a year ago, I doubt Australia would have secured the seat. It would have been disastrous for Australia.
Why do you say that? Where would it have lost the votes apart from Timor?
When we lobbied for someone for the Security Council, we lobbied because we trust the countries that we lobbied. They would be, today they are shocked. That with the news about Australia's espionage on East Timor and on Indonesia.
Indonesia's Foreign Minister, Marty Natragawa, says he believes Australia will no longer eavesdrop on Indonesian officials and says intelligence gathering must stop. He spoke to the ABC's Jim Middleton.
Julie Bishop said in your presence that Australia would not use its intelligence assets to harm Indonesia in any way. Do you take that to mean there will be no further espionage from Australian assets in Indonesia and certainly no more eavesdropping on the president, his wife, or indeed top officials like yourself?
Absolutely. That's how we understand it. This is a very, very important commitment, one that has been made yesterday by Minister Bishop, with whom I had a very constructive and a very productive discussion. It's the same sentiment expressed by the Prime Minister in his letter to our President. And we are keen to be able to manifest this commitment in a more formal and in a more concrete fashion.
Well, I wonder then what you make of a public statement from Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott this morning on radio in Australia this morning that Australia will not stop collecting intelligence on Indonesia and that they haven't agreed to stop collecting intelligence on Australia, quote unquote.
Yeah. I don't see anything inherently inconsistent with that kind of statement, in the sense that intelligence gathering, the collection of intelligence and information is something that countries do, but it must be done under a cooperative framework. After all, Indonesia and Australia, we actually have we had information and intelligence sharing cooperation, especially within the so-called Lombok Treaty. So if all this is done, as part of the formal interagency, interintelligence agency framework, I think that's very much consistent with the spirit and the letter of the kind of approach that we are promoting just now.
So it is the behaviour that you saw revealed as having occurred from the Australian Embassy in Jakarta and specifically the eavesdropping on mobile telephone calls that you object to, rather than general intelligence gathering in Indonesia, according to the protocols that have been developed by the two countries over the years?
Absolutely. It's the intelligence cooperation between countries, information exchange, intelligence sharing, very, very important and critical even in many instances to be able to address common issues and common challenge. Therefore, formal interagency cooperation is something that we welcome and that's actually needed. That's why the decision to temporarily suspend such cooperation is taken not without thorough consideration and all that. But what we wouldn't condone would be the type of activities as described in the reports about the extraterritorial unlawful type of intelligence or information gathering, data collection.
And it's your understanding, is it, that Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott has now agreed to stop that?
Yes, most definitely, because the commitment not to undertake any activities that's harmful to Indonesia, that would be including the deployment or deployment of intelligence resources, would suggest that such activities would no longer be carried out. But in any case, Jim, it's all about intent, isn't it? I mean, we can talk about the details about who is doing what and all that. But in the final analysis, you know, we have to rebuild the trust. And I believe that process of rebuilding trust is now very much underway. Indonesia, both the government and the people of Indonesia, has the huge reservoir of goodwill for Australia, and we have a real interest in wanting to move forward and strengthen our bilateral relations. And our intent is benign, is peaceful, and is friendly and a strategic partner. And let's ensure that the kind of activities that our intelligence agencies conduct is consistent with that kind of outlook.
In your joint appearance at the Foreign Ministry, the Australian Foreign Minister also said that Australia regretted the hurt caused to the President and the people of Indonesia as a result of the eavesdropping from the Australian Embassy in Jakarta. In your government's view, is that an apology?
It's a very, very important statement that we have taken on board as part of that process of rebuilding our trust and confidence and comfort level. Not only has there been expression of regret vis-à-vis the discomfort or the felt by the President of Indonesia and people of Indonesia, but as well about the incidents leading to the situation where we are in just now. So a very, very important statement as part of that process of moving forward. You know, Indonesia and Australia, once again, I have to emphasize, we have many common interests and we need to be taking a very responsible and measured steps to restore the normalcy in our relations. It's a very important step, first steps towards normalizing our relations, certainly.
And you're listening to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. Japan's new state secrets law has been described as the largest threat to democracy in the nation's post-war history. The law means public servants who leak state secrets can be jailed up to 10 years, while journalists convicted of encouraging such leaks can receive up to 5 years. The Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says it's necessary, but has admitted that it could have been better explained as public protests continue. Sidharath Nithi reports.
Under the new law, top Japanese officials in all ministries can designate special state secrets under four categories: defense, diplomacy, counterterrorism, and espionage. They can then be kept secret for up to 60 years, or in some cases, even longer. Masako Mori, the minister in charge of the secrecy law, says it's all about national security.
With the current tension in the international sphere, in order to protect the livelihood and nation of our citizens, it is necessary and urgent that this was passed.
But the media, lawyers and rights groups have criticised it, worried about press freedom and the public's right to know. And with laws already existing to protect sensitive information, why this new one?
Things that really aren't that sensitive, but might be inconvenient for bureaucrats, will suddenly be labelled secrets and nobody can find out about that information.
Dr. Jeff Kingston from Temple University in Tokyo says in recent decades there have been a number of corruption scandals in Japan involving bureaucrats. And as people learned about them, the more they wanted to know.
Over the past 10 years, support for freedom of information has grown in society because people believe that transparency and accountability are key to good governance. And they know what happens when bureaucrats know that nobody is looking over their shoulder. It is a recipe for bad governance.
The new law has no provision for third-party oversight, something the government has only promised verbally. Dr. Kingston says concerns are rising.
This is actually what they're really worried about, that the government is trying to curtail political freedoms of the people, and this is, you know, undermining the whole point of transparency, accountability, and good governance.
Ruling party MP Shigeru Ishiba recently likened people protesting against the law to terrorists, and he says the law can help Japan deal with recent regional tensions.
With things like the establishment of the China Air Defence Zone, there is definitely increasing anxiety regarding the security and safety of our citizens. With the passing of the state secrets law, we are able to improve the security of our nation.
But Dr. Jeff Kingston believes it has very little to do with China.
Certainly, China, acting like a credible bogeyman, has put wind in his sails, promoting his secrecy and security agendas. But I think in actual fact, there's very little connection with China.
The new state secrets law appears to have already cost the Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe. His support rate has fallen by 10% over the past month to 47.6%. And a nationwide telephone survey by Kyodo News found 82% of respondents wanted the law revised or abolished.
And finally on the program, a little bit of a fashion show on radio, which I know seems kind of ludicrous. Indonesia's answer to Bansky. The renowned Jakartan street artist Donawats teamed up with a Melbourne fashion label, Fame Agenda, to create a unique and distinctive cross-cultural range of clothing for a showcase event that was held at the Multicultural Arts Centre in Melbourne. Dina Indrasafati reports.
The work of noted Indonesian street artist Darbots is a familiar sight all over Jakarta. Now, his famous style has moved from streetscapes to high fashion.
Wow, Darbots, colors have come up really well.
The Darbots clothes range blends his signature marks with the design smarts of Monica Lim, whose Fame Agenda label is based in Melbourne CBD.
Well, Darbots is a bit of an urban legend in Jakarta, a bit like Banksy. So it's a really significant project for us. It's a great opportunity.
The partnership has been months in the making, and the first for the elusive artist.
This project with a fashion brand is my first time. So yeah, I always like explore new media.
It's also a unique cultural exchange.
I think it's done.
Yay! It's very significant. I mean, we live close by, you know, Indonesia and Australia. So it's a good thing to have, you know, to share the culture.
Visually, I can imagine a roll of fabric just stretching across the ocean between Australia and Indonesia. And I think, yes, it would be great if we were part of that process where we had a collaboration between the two countries.
And this is where the collaboration takes the stage, in Victoria State Library, as a showcase for Multicultural Arts Victoria.
What we're trying to show is the contemporary side of Indonesia, of Asia. I can't wait to see the fashion. I've had a little sneak preview, but it looks absolutely extraordinary.
And once the models hit the catwalk, it's time to let the clothes do the talking.
I think it's great. I mean, the weather is nice. I mean, the music, the vibe, everything is good. I mean, it's good to be here. Yeah.
Darbots was enjoying himself outside, but we were hectic inside. But it went well.
Well, that's it. And that's all we have time for on this edition of the program. We'd like to find out where you're listening to the show on, so if it's through our own service or through one of our partner stations, do let us know. Our email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. Once again, focus@pcjmedia.com. You can also listen to this edition and past editions by visiting our website, pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing a best of program looking at some of the more interesting stories that we've covered over the past year. And that is going to be the final edition for 2013. And of course, we'll be welcoming in the new year and in January, that is. But what do we have on that show? I don't know. I can't tell you. That's really too far in advance. Anyway, on behalf of everyone that helped put the program together, I'm Keith Perrault wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take care and bye for now.